Welcome, everybody, to the City Brew Tours Beer Club live stream and podcast. It's me, Jonathan, and I am back as your hostess of the mostest. And we have a wonderful city, but I am not alone. Before we introduce where we're drinking from, even though everybody already knows because they have their beer and their box. But I do have a co-host with me this month and this week who he'll say that he's actually, or he says a lot of times about me, one of my favorite people to drink with. Ethan, what's up?
Well, you're not wrong. You are one of my favorite people to drink
with. I know.
Whether it is in person or on the internet, like anytime we get together, it's a good time. Hey, Jonathan, thank you for having me on the City Brew Tours CBTBC, right, is what we've been calling
CBTBC.
It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be having some beers with you and everybody here on the internet and everybody at home.
Of course. And I just thought I would beat you to the punch on
thank you. I appreciate
that. I was like, even though I stumbled over my words, we got it there.
You did.
And the only reason I'm stumbling is because it's been a long day. I'm getting thirsty and, you know, it's a whole thing.
Jonathan, there's only one way to solve that.
You know, we can crack open a beer, but this is one thing I want to tell everyone. We can only choose two beers out of this box because I could drink six beers or five beers from five fantastic breweries that we have in this box. I probably should not do that in an hour. I can, and I know that you've seen me do that.
And honestly, it's a good time.
For you, yes. For our listeners, and then for me having to edit this afterwards, probably not so much. But we are going to be drinking the Nubel and the Lustra today. But I do want to say thank you to all the other brewers. This is our second time back to Pittsburgh in a matter of a few years. Every time working with these breweries, fantastic time, lovely people, lovely beer. And, you know, let's crack open a beer while we start drinking this and let the lovely people know why we even like Pittsburgh.
Well, so Pittsburgh's a great town, but yeah. So what are we drinking first, Jonathan?
So we are going to drink that Nubel. Nubel. We're going to start light. So, like a Instagrammer, I learned you have to like put your hand.
You have to hold your hand behind it, right? That's
how. Yeah, I like them.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we will crack that open first. Yeah, you know, just like any time that we're having two different beers or multiple beers, I like to start with light and work our way in that boldness. So we are cracking this open. You know, even though Pittsburgh, we could talk about Pittsburgh all day long. You know, it has rich history, obviously, Steelers, football, steelwork, all of the bridges, everything. But did you know it also home of Mr. Rogers?
Well, I mean, I'd heard that. I heard that he'd had some time, he'd done some time there, and that he's one of the proud sons of that area. I mean, I grew up watching Mr. Rogers. I don't know if he was a part of your...
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I was just reading about the time that he met the gorilla. I forget what their name was, and how the gorilla had really enjoyed watching him. And the first thing that the gorilla did was take off his shoes because that's what he saw happening there.
And the great thing about everyone listening here, you can crack open a beer with your shoes off, put on your sweater, and just enjoy a nice beer with us here at the CBTBC.
CBTBC, yes, indeed. So, so the other thing I love, so I have spent a brief amount of time in Pittsburgh. I've been through a couple times, mostly driving there, which always feels appropriate to me.
Yeah.
And the reason is that, you know, if you have not been to Pittsburgh, one thing you have to know is that there are a lot of bridges there.
Yes.
I believe the count is over 445. I have driven across quite a few of them. And part of that is because you've got all these three wonderful rivers that meet in downtown Pittsburgh, the Ohio, the Allegheny, and the Monongahela River. I'll have to ask our locals if I've been pronouncing it wrong for many decades in this case. And there's a decent amount of water there because from what I understand, Pittsburgh has more rain and snow than Seattle, Washington.
Which is insane. Like, I know we were just in Seattle a few months ago in our boxes talking with the lovely people over there. And they always say that it's sunny in Seattle. I don't know. I guess it's more sunnier in Seattle than it is in Pittsburgh.
I guess
so there
that
we go. The last thing before we drink, I do have to, and maybe we'll have to ask our local experts about this. I did not know, one, that large number of bananas were produced in Pittsburgh.
Shocking.
Well, you know, it's even shocking with the 1936 banana explosion
Excuse
that
me.
actually, sh yeah, 1936, the gases that were used to ripen bananas created an explosion and shook the town. So there you go. So on
That's
that note,
concerning.
cheers. Cheers,
Cheers,
everyone.
everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers with this the Nubel, the beautiful Kolsch style beer that we're enjoying from Burgers Brewing Company. And let me
And
tell you,
with that, Neil, come on out. Come on down. Welcome to the neighborhood. I guess I don't know. I don't remember the welcome that Mr. Rogers
won't you
would
be
say.
my neighbor? Yeah.
Yeah, won't you be my neighbor?
And I
So
gotta
I
say,
too have a Kolsch beer. I've got a Neubel ready to go. And yeah, we're here in the friendly city of Pittsburgh, home of Mr. Rogers, but he's making friends and being nice to everybody. But we're also home to Mr. Yuck, saving lives of toddlers
Mr.
everywhere.
Yuck, huh? That was another childhood favorite of mine. I'm going to be honest, Neil. I saw
But
that more than I should have, probably.
this beer is all yum, man. It's super easy drinking, Kolsch. It's the apex of day drinking from the city of Cologne, is where this style of beer gets its wings. And folks drink them out of these 200 mil stanges in buffet style or Brazilian steakhouse style, whereas you get refills of this until you say stop. And these are to be drank sessionably, quickly, and enjoyed rapidly, without a care in the world, sitting in beer garden somewhere lovely with sunshine and a cool breeze.
So, Neil, I have to ask, what is your record or like max out when you finally say stop for yourself?
We did this last weekend for Mardi Gras, and
For
I
you.
did not participate because I was working, but my proxy did 21 Kolsches and
Yes.
was, of course, appropriately driven home.
Yeah. Well,
Yes.
Neil, I gotta say, I love a good Kolsch, and I think that this one is just so nice. It's got a good bready character. There's a nice sweetness to it. It's crisp and refreshing. It's kind of like it is the perfect, like, it's a hot day. I need to cool down, and we're gonna just enjoy a good, excellent beer. It's gonna put you in the right mood.
Yeah,
I think
no.
so. It's a great summer choice. And this is actually an ale. It's one of the few ales that come from Germany before the lager fad or culture hit. And so it is a lager that drinks like I'm sorry, it's an ale that drinks like a lager. It is very much brewed in a lager style, but it's an ale yeast that comes for it. So it has a little bit of that ester character that gives it some unctuousness, a little bit of residual sweetness, but it is dried out. It is very sessionable, very easy to drink, and a great day drinking choice that doesn't get too boring over time either.
Oh no. Yeah, that ester is really there. I definitely get it. It gave me a little hit of the banana, sort of just gently right, making everything happen for me.
Man, I hope you're not getting bananas here.
Yeah,
Did we
well,
say bananas? We meant
with that
not
explosion that
bananas.
happened, we got bad news coming.
Yeah, yeah,
So I had a question. This beer has such a cool name. And I know the name has a history on it, right?
It does. And it's a little bit of a intertwining of my culture growing up down south. I grew up in southern Mississippi and I have a lot of family in Louisiana. My wife's whole family is real Cajun. And so we practice Mardi Gras down there every year. And so likewise, there's Carnival in Rio de Janeiro. There's Carnival also in Cologne, Germany. And so they have one of the larger fests up there, and they do something, the burning of the Nubel. And that is pronounced, I'm gonna wreck this, but Nubel verbrunning. And that is the burning of the Nubel. And he's like an effigy that is the culmination of all your sins. He's the scapegoat, the straw man, and he's literally a straw person. And at the end of the night, there's kind of like a uproarious fun event where they burn the Nubel. And this is at Fat Tuesday, we would, you know, have the final parades. We're drinking our asses off in New Orleans, and 12 o'clock hits, and it's Ash Wednesday. Well, they burn the noble. They're like, who made you cheat on your wife? Who made you pee in the street? Who, you know, made you leave the toilet seat up? The noble, the noble. And then they burn him. And so once that's all done, like, oh, you're, all your sins are forgotten. You're good to go. And I'm assuming they use the charred remains to put the little ash cross on your forehead. You're good for another year.
So if I drink enough of these, my sins are forgiven.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
You are, I'm ordained to tell you so.
Perfect.
No, I mean, you brought us the beer, so clearly, clearly that's. I know.
And then, Neil, I'm just curious because, you know, with, you know, burgers, and you're talking about, you know, these German styles with this Southern heritage, where did your journey with brewing start? And then how did Burgers Brewing kind of come out of that?
So my family is well-traveled, and we are a drinking family. And so I was brought up around European-style drinking culture, and it followed through. And through my youth, I drank some of the most European-style American lagers. No, I'm just kidding. I drank trash beer as a kid, just like everybody else. And then when I actually had money and taste, I started venturing out, and European-style beer really caught me. I went through a pretty hard Belgian phase as well, but one thing remains the same is light, flavorful European-style lagers. Continental-style beer from there was really the thing that I still drink today and I still prefer to drink. And so then I began making my own as a home brewer, and I really wanted to like go for the lager. And as a home brewer, especially back in the early days before we had good technology information and, you know, general practice of home brewing with buckets and coolers and trash equipment, lagers were hard, like, you know, because it's all about temperature control and taking care of your yeast and just like really nailing the really, you know, small details to make like a beer that's like clean and nuanced in flavor, but not void of flavor. And so I got pretty good at doing that. And I wanted to quit my engineering job, and I found a friend. I didn't find a friend. He found me, and he liked my homebrew beer and asked me if I would consider consulting him, transforming his restaurant business into a brewery. And I thought I'd get some free beer out of the deal. And then fast forward a year, I'm a co-owner. I own half the place, and I've built the brewery. I quit my engineering job, put myself through Siebel Institute Brewing School so I could get an academic background and what I thought, you know, was a pretty good foundation of learning, but home brewing is not enough when you do this for a living. And so I did the Siebel Advanced Brewing Technology full course and learned the academics of it. And now I'm just practicing, practicing on the retail side. And I think we're getting pretty damn good at it. We're expanding into a 14,000 square foot lager focused brewery here very soon.
Nice.
Hopefully June-ish, August-ish, depending on when my general contractor issues us in there.
Fair. Well, I mean, if this is what you're putting out, then goodness, I'm glad to see it's happening at scale.
Oh yeah, we are definitely overworking the meager equipment we have now. If you saw the equipment we have now, you would not believe the beer that we make comes off of it. And that's why we do not have a brewery tour. We have a very humble setup, and man, we work that equipment like a porn star. It does a good job. It still makes great beer, but we work too hard to make too little beer. So we are going to increase that volume, amplify that system by a factor of 20.
And
start making some very, very good beer, or even better beer.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And especially being a lager-focused brewery, which obviously has some, even though it has pros of making fantastic beers like this one and others, there's a little bit more like time sensitivity
it's
than
so
just like,
oh my gosh,
than just like cranking out like IPAs, which I know you do as well, which we also have in this box. So How is that like on the business side? How do you have to kind of approach things? I'm sure your schedule is like down to the T of planning ahead, and I'm sure with a small system also that can create backlog. How's that working for you? And has there ever been any time where you're like literally have to tell people you just have to wait for beer?
We've never run out of beer. I have a pretty good logistics shell game going. I do have a really good background in project management, engineering, developing, keeping things moving. And I love a good spreadsheet, man. I am a Excel ninja. And so through the powers of Excel and brute force and ignorance, we make enough beers somehow and keep the taps full. And yeah, we haven't run out. We do have a pretty good cicklet rate of lager and ale brewing that we're able to manage the size of batches so we can put some things out small and then do larger double, triple turns of other things. And lager will keep longer in the cooler. And you just balance this game. It's tough, but I actually really like this puzzle. I like this part of things being able to logistically create like the menu that I need, forecasting it down the road and making sure that we don't run out of key players and we keep a good variety on tap because we're also a craft hamburger restaurant. We make some of the best smash burgers here in the city, and I would go as far as the country here. We're doing great things with burgers, but we want our beer to reflect those flavors. These things should be a cooperation of flavor, and nothing, should be out of sync there. So there's not a whole lot of cool points in restaurant brewery, but what we do is I think we recreate the food and beer picture that really is a inseparable part of both of our arts. And so, but yeah, back to making more beer, it is it's a challenge. And so we've outgrown our old shoes, and we're growing, we're getting bigger shoes now. And that game is going to increase a little bit on both quantity and quality. And right now I've got lager must be in my tank 33 days before it hits the cooler. And then, for my 6 weeks of lagering, well, we call that keg lagering sometimes. So if I can't get a full 6 weeks of lagering, then the 33 days in the tank minimum, it goes into the cooler in a keg. And then we release that beer once it is, appropriately flavor tested, and we think it has an appropriate amount of lagering on it, but we do have some very high demands on that timing of making a proper lager and when it needs to be released to the public because we have such a little footprint here in Pittsburgh. We don't really have we don't have broad enough industry shoulders to put out a shit beer.
No, and that's the thing of like having a smaller footprint. You're only as good as your last beer. And so and lagers, especially if you're doing something like a Kolsch style or a Pilsner, there's a lot of room for variety, I guess we'll say, room for error. And so like you have to make a good beer, and I will say 100% you are making a good beer. It is this. I'm already halfway through, which is probably really too quick for me, but it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
You're drinking at the
Thank you.
appropriate rate for a Kolsch, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a light drinker. I'm in my second one. I don't know. That's
There you go.
coming up on four stanges here. We're doing pretty good in the time allotted, I think.
Yeah.
So
And
I got a quick question for you. You mentioned burgers, and burgers, like I assume burger is Pittsburgh, like someone from
correct.
Pittsburgh, right? But you've also mentioned burger, which is the correct sandwich. There is no better one. So talk to me about these burgers you guys are making, because a burger and a beer is perhaps the best meal combination exists. And if I'm drinking something like this at your spot, what should I be ordering to really pair this appropriately?
I mean, we absolutely agree, but the burger is the perfect thing. I mean, pizza might be a close second, but come on, it's burgers and beer. And yeah, so my chef partner, he's a classically trained Italian chef. He's a pizza guy, he's a pasta guy. His wife owns his previous fancy Italian restaurant, and we focus on burgers, but these are smash burgers. So these are pressed into the griddle, hard, they're smashed. You get a huge Maillard reaction, and like you've got the surface area of Maillard on this this really nice beef burger. We use a select grind of beef from a local farm, and we have a very high quality meat. And then once this technique and this process takes place with the Maillard effect, you get the lacy edges, the crispy burger, and then we add the condiments of, you name it, man. We've got a bunch of signature burgers that have everything from eggs to chilies to pierogies on it. And, you know, whatever that combination is, we can find a dynamic. And pairing beer is, it's kind of easy. Like, I don't want to throw a whole lot of Skittles and root beer at a burger, but root beer is great with a burger. But when I'm thinking beer, I want same, same, or different, different flavors. And that's to say, like, I want something that parallels the flavor notes. Like if I have a high acidity item on that burger, such as like balsamic vinaigrette, then maybe I want a higher acidity level beer. And that can be anything from Pilsner to a sour beer, because they're both pretty acidic. Or we can go different, different. And I can throw a Doppelbock at that guy that's got a little bit of a sweet and stone fruit resonance to it that really applies itself to the outer edges of that flavor profile. And then same with like a breakfast burger. Like we have one called the Morningside. It's got eggs and bacon and mayo on it. It's just plain Jane, American cheese, egg, bacon, mayo. And it's one of the most best hangover removers in the entire world. But that guy goes great with a light lager, like anything, you know, of a macro size type yellow beer, or like throw a oatmeal stout at it and you've got yourself a nap.
Yeah, no, that sounds delicious. I know. I also have your website up, and I'm seeing the burgers. I'm like, now I'm getting hungry. Just looking at it as you talk about this. But no, that's sure exactly that, with like the pairing, and obviously Ethan and I in New York, we're like pizza and beer, but the burgers with that fat, the acid, like it just makes sense. But my question is, do the beers inspire the flavor of the burgers or vice versa?
We don't jump in each other's sandbox a whole lot, but we are very collaborative in that we understand each other's situation as far as like art and technique goes. And what we're trying to do is bring it all together full circle. And it's a support system of flavor. And so where we don't really have to coordinate a whole lot, because we talk, everything is flavor to us. And like we're flavor chasers. And what we want to do is just like elicit the most like dynamic range of flavors. And so we're thinking of that all the time. And it just kind of works out. Like, this is a collaborative process that doesn't require a whole lot of intercommunication on like, hey man, I'm thinking I'm gonna do this, and so I've got a perfect beer for that. It's just we're kind of in sync. We've both got our games figured out as far as like how we want to complement the thing, and it's all about the flavor.
Nice. And now I know you have to go to your brewery to get the burgers, but where else can people get your beer? Is that only in Pittsburgh? Are you in all of PA? Are you, or do we have to go to you?
You have to go to me currently. So I'm a very small brewery, but I have three location tap rooms. And so we have avoided distribution in that we don't have the footprint to create enough wholesale beer to sustain any sort of profitable distribution footprint, as well as maintain the 32 taps I need to keep full at my three locations. So we sell all of our beer over the counter in our tap rooms, and we do a very limited amount of canned stuff. Like, I love doing these special events, like with you guys. I love these boxes. And a few other things that where I can get it out in a couple of restaurants around, but I honestly don't make enough beer to put it on the shelf. And I still deliver every single keg in the back of my Toyota Tacoma.
Yes.
And so that was 197,000 pounds of beer that I lifted last year. No shit, I add this up. because I tell my staff when I have to lift kegs four times when they leave the cooler a mess, I really don't want to lift them another time after I've already lifted 200,000 pounds of beer.
At first, I thought you were going to say your Toyota Camry, and I was going to be really impressed, but your Tacoma makes more sense.
It's a hatchback.
That's the hustle that it takes to be a small brewer, right? I mean, I feel like a lot of people sort of realize, oh, I want to make this beer, but that part of it is actually literally throw it in the back of your truck and driving it to the spot that's going to put it out in the world for you.
You too can be a small business owner if you've got a weak mind and a strong back. But no, it's part of the growth thing is like also not overshooting our headlights in that like. Trying to like we've grown very slowly and we're growing well, but part of that was my partner and I are still working the line every single day, and that is to one, we want to do what we do like forever, and we want to maintain like you know a positive control over our craft, but at the same time we can't afford these large systems without getting outside of our financial comfort. And so like we still do a lot of the work, and that means I deliver all the beer. My partner still closes the kitchen a couple nights a week at any one of our three locations. And you know, we're working our way up from a very small like shop to a much bigger situation, but we also maintain that level headedness that like we can perform every single job on the floor. We've done all this thing, we've cleaned every toilet that we own. And so like when we hire people, we're sensitive to that because like treating people ethically, paying people ethically, and you know, knowing the job they do and what that labor is worth, I think kind of ties it all together in like our esprit de corps or, you know, the thing that we want to promote within our community, our industry, is that like service industry is it's a professional job, and we want folks to be treated professionally. Right now, I just can't pay a whole lot of professionals, so I've got to do a whole hell of a lot of backbreaking work until I can hire that army of professionals. But the guys I do have, they do a great job, and we take great care of them, and we know exactly how hard they work because we do the same job.
I love hearing that. I'm going to say my favorite line that I say anytime I get to join one of these: tip your bartenders, tip your beer tenders, take care of your service professionals because they are taking good care of you.
Absolutely. Hardest working people in the industry.
Very true. Cheers to that.
Where the delivery go.
Yes. And tip your beer delivery people too, apparently. They put how many kegs into the back of their car? That's
I can get 9 in the back of a 6-foot bed Tacoma.
Okay. Yeah.
It's heavy.
See, now I'm gonna have to try that, Neil. You've set a challenge for me. I'm gonna have to lift some kegs myself.
And just drive a Tacoma around the city.
Yeah.
My brewery is actually 35 miles outside the city. In Zelenople where we began. So that's roughly 30 miles outside of the center of the city. And that's where our mothership location is. And our humble little brewery began out there. It's a 1,600 square foot space. Cool. And we're moving into a 14,000 square foot space here soon. It's adjoining tap room. So it's not all brewery. But a lot of it is. So, and then from there, all beer happens. That's the nexus of logistics. It all flows from Zelenople, and that little Toyota is trucking about 25 kegs a week hither and thither and yon, getting beer to all of our locations, making sure that all 32 of those taps are full for the weekend and the weekday.
Nice.
Now, in case folks are visiting Pittsburgh, can you tell us where those three locations are and how they should get in touch with you if they want to have more beer from you guys?
Okay. So our mothership location, where it all began, is in Zelenople, Zelienople, Pennsylvania. It's just a little north of Pittsburgh, like on your way to Erie, but not too far. It's an easy ride, and it's beautiful out there. And then in the city, we're in Lawrenceville, which is just outside the strip, just outside of downtown, headed east. And you can get there via Penn Avenue or Butler Street, but that's 3601 Butler Street. And then our newest location is the Beer Garden and Tap Room in the south side. And it's at the Highline location, and it is 319 East Carson Street, and that's a beautiful outdoor area. And then I have the tiniest bar in the entire world. This place is, it's actually cool to look at because we put an entire kitchen and bar in a building that is 7 feet, 3 inches wide by 100 feet long. It's like the world's largest food truck. Wait, no shit. I have seating for 9 in there. Actually, I have seating for 6, but I have a fire capacity of 9. So it's standing room only in there, but I have an outdoor beer garden that we can put about 150 people in, and it's really an outdoor space, but it's a nice adult playground that is kind of a pre-party spot for the folks moving into the more adolescent areas of the South Side. Beautiful party spot, and it's at the old terminal complex, which is now renamed the High Line. And we will soon be moving into Millville in the very near future. And that's our new brewery, which will then become the new mothership, the new nexus of distribution. And from there, who knows?
I mean, that's what I always like to ask is, like, you guys are getting ready to expand. What's next for burgers? The future is wide open. Is there anything that, like, you do want to plug besides people just coming and drinking your beer, which... obviously, go to burgers, grab a burger, grab some beer, do that. But what are you guys, are you just embracing the future as it comes, or besides expanding into this new location?
Currently, expansion is a big focus of ours. Finding those like those new avenues of business will be, That's a whole new thing. And I want people to grow with us as well. And we have a lot of very supporting customers, but meeting new people because we're now, you know, putting a face and an image. Nobody's ever seen my brewery because we're in a 1600 square foot windowless warehouse in the neither regions of Zelenople. So we're making a very forward facing place in Millville that we do want to be seen, and we do want to create some new avenues of business. But check us out at any of our socials, which is Burgers Brewing PGH on the Instas, Burgers PGH on, or no, Burgers Brewing on Facebook. You can find me, Brewer Neil PGH on Insta, and Burgers Brewing, or no, BurgersPGH.com, BurgersPGH.com. Is our .com. You can see our menus. We just did a whole new rebranding and web design thing to kind of usher in this newer image that we're looking for. And you can see I'm wearing some vintage Burgers yes. gear. And that's a little, that's our younger selves. We've gotten rid of this superfluous apostrophe here. We get it. Burgers, Pittsburgh Burgers. Everybody gets that now. And we have this a little bit more, we're calling it, I don't know how you do the Insta thing. So this is our newer image logo, and so we're growing up a little bit. We're maturing as a business. We're maturing as a brand, and we're wanting to explore some new places and see some new faces. And we've just rebranded slowly and putting out a little bit different image of ourselves. And then you're going to see a whole new image of ourselves that you've never seen, because you've never walked through my brewery. And we're putting together a little stainless Taj Mahal in Millville that I welcome everybody to. With 2 floors, 2 bars, a lot of outdoor space, parking, of course. Pittsburgh people love parking. And same lovely food that we've had, and hopefully a whole lot of lagers. I've developed or designed a brewing system that is very lager focused. We have a lot of lagering tanks, and I will have at very minimum 10 lagers on tap at any given point in this new location. So this is something that I'm really wanting to push the envelope on our technique, our skills, and our ability to deliver.
So I have to ask, out of 10 taps that are lagers, how many taps total will you have at that new location?
20 on each floor.
So half of your taps are going to be lagers.
Absolutely. And that is the challenge that my brewers and myself are putting on ourselves. And we relish the idea of this clear beer wonderland.
That is a commitment. That is honestly that's like destination style for those who love lagers. Clearly, burgers is the place to watch. So,
I'm going to try to make it happen. I'm not going to try. We're going to make this happen. We don't have much choice. It's happening.
That's fantastic. And I know every time that we have someone that doesn't distribute in our boxes, on the live stream, on the podcast, everyone's like, well, okay, now I'm going to Pittsburgh again, or now I have another road trip I have to plan. So I can guarantee that somebody listening, somebody on here is definitely going to be visiting you very, very soon. I'm in New York, so I'm not that far away. It's close enough. It's commutable.
No,
Maybe
yeah.
not, like right now,
Oh, come on,
but
Jonathan. We'll make
the
this
weather's going
happen.
to be better soon. So,
yeah.
February is not the month, but
You
once
know,
you get into April or May,
April, yeah.
yeah.
Definitely gonna come. Need to come grab a burger, grab some beer. I know I'm looking forward to it. I know everyone else is. Obviously, we have more beer to drink. But I know that Neil's gonna be hanging around. So for any of our guests or any of our viewers that are here, if you do still have questions for Neil, he's gonna be hanging around answering any of those questions. RJ loved the hazy IPA as well.
Flying up the bridge. Do look that guy up. That is a Pittsburgh-ism as well. Some crazy bastard who's now a dentist in New Jersey drove a 64 station wagon off of the unfinished Duquesne Bridge. Back when it was called the Bridge to Nowhere, there was 90 feet of space between this elevated bridge and the North Shore. And this guy drove through the barriers, flipped it upside down, Dukes of Hazzard that bastard over the bridge and landed on its roof and survived. Promptly arrested and well, he finished college.
Well, at least he finished college. There you go. There's a
Love a
happy
story
ending.
with a happy ending. We
Yeah.
do love
Yep.
that.
And I feel like a hazy IPA is a very appropriate beer with that name. I haven't cracked into it yet, but I know I'm looking forward to it.
Watch the Rick Seebach special flying up Bridges to Nowhere and flying off the bridges to nowhere, another Pittsburgh icon with Mr. Yuck and Mr. Rogers. Rick Seebach, there's a special on the flying off the bridge, and that's what the impetus for that beer design was.
I feel like that's an evening coming up. That's going to be watching that and drinking Flying Off the Bridge. I feel like that's a perfect match.
You're gonna love it. Dry documentaries, it's all about
Why
it's
you
all fun.
need that one?
Perfect. Neil, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the beer, for your story, for what you're doing with having half of your upcoming brood to be lagers and like pushing that envelope on lagers. I know the European style beers are making an impact and coming back to the United States, and it's no little feat to brewers like yourself, to those home brewers that just like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, and taking those chances and just keep pushing forward. But thank you so much for staying. I know I'm also finished my beer, which means that it's
I've got
time
a
for
little bit of
the.
an issue here. I'm kind of empty.
Yeah, which means it's time for our second one.
Think it's time for Alestra, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we do have that Lustra, and we are going to crack that open right now. And it would be only polite, as Ethan would say,
Only polite.
Andrew, come on over and let us hang out with us for a while.
The
Neil, we'll see you.
notes have
Yeah.
arrived, I hear. Do you
Yeah.
want me to sign off or do you want me to hang out here and shut up?
You can hang out. You can just take your video off, hang out, answer any questions. I know RJ's got a few questions for you about your engineering. You can answer those in the chat, and we'll Andrew, you've been so polite hanging out in the corner. Quiet as a gnome. Is that a term? I feel like that's a
Can
term.
be now,
It
yeah.
is now,
It
yeah. You're quiet
made
as
it
a
a thing.
gnome.
CBTBC, we make things happen. All right.
We're making new terms, cracking open that Lustra. Welcome. Welcome to the.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me
Were
on.
you drinking along with us? I have to ask in the quiet, or were you like
Yes,
being
no, I
polite?
was drinking along the quiet. I did not unfortunately did not have a Burger's beer on me. So I was drinking one of our Pilsners and now I have a Lustra. But I am excited to try Nubel as soon as I'm able.
Oh,
Now
yeah.
this has got a beautiful nose to it. Nice and floral, a little touch of the resin in there. It's got a nice hazy character to it. I mean, if I do the wiggle test, there's nothing coming through on this
Yeah,
guy. Ooh,
cheers.
I am excited. This is the for those of you who may know me from my alter ego who lives on the Beer Avengers podcast, you may know that this is one of my favorite styles of beer. So I just cannot wait to get this one going.
Oh, cheers.
Oh.
Oh, that's, yeah. As a
Oh.
hazy pale ale,
That is
I always like the term hazy pale ale because it just is contradictory of like,
yeah, oh,
it's like, it's a
absolutely.
hazy pale. It's like,
Yeah.
no, this is just a hazy, but you can't say hazy ale because then people think it's an IPA.
Yeah.
But no, this is has all that loveliness that you want from a hazy IPA, but it's light and it's only 5.8%. So it's
It's
gonna be
got that
lovely.
grapefruit that I want. So there's a little bit of bitter in there that's so good. There's like a tangerine character to this. The nose is nice and intense. It's got a good like hit at the very end of it. I think you guys say that this is the one that started the brewery, our favorite beer, and seemed to be yours too. And Andrew, I'm going to say I may be a convert.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it definitely was this was, we opened up in 2016 and that was the start, I'd say the start of the haze craze. I wouldn't say before it by any means, but we were more or less the first brewery in Pittsburgh to really focus on it. Brew Gentleman was kind of doing some stuff at the time that was dipping their toes into the hazy world, but they certainly started out in a more traditional sense. We kind of came on doing full haze, and when I was looking to open the brewery, this was the beer that I spent pretty much all of my time on, trying to make, our flagship. And I think what's interesting is like back in 2016, consumers didn't want a flagship; they wanted something different all the time. And we certainly operated that way for a little bit and gave it to them. But Lustre was always the beer that we wanted to be the one that you came back to. And yeah, luckily for it worked out that way. It's about 35 to 40% of our total production in a year, and it has further distribution than any of our other beers, mostly in Pennsylvania, but yeah, it worked out from its humble beginnings way back in 2013. So
Wow. So
nice.
this beer is going on its 11th year of production and it's still going.
Well, eighth year of production. So we opened to the public in 2016, but I've been working on it as a beer since home brewing days in 2013. Yeah.
So you yourself also started as a home brewer and then, hey, I want to start a brewery.
For sure. I'm a little bit different in that I loved beer. I got into craft beer pretty immediately on turning 21. That was that I grew up in a very food focused family, where a lot of my relatives are chefs or own restaurants or are in the food business somehow. So flavor and food experience was always very important to the family. And I just grew up that way. And beer was kind of an extension of that for me, where like I had no interest in being a chef. I didn't want to do that, didn't want to own a restaurant, absolutely not. But beer was kind of an extension of being able to be, say, like, there's so much around this and so much you can do with this beverage. It's so utilitarian that you can drive it to so many different palates, that I ended up kind of putting everything into that. So I loved beer. I my background was actually in art and film. So I went to film school and worked in fashion retail and film photography for fashion retail companies. Specifically, American Eagle is based here in Pittsburgh, and I was a photographer at AE, and traveled a lot and enjoyed beer and kind of wanted to make it a career. And so I went to American Brewers Guild in Vermont to really learn the science and education, since my background was more in art. And then from there, just kind of decided to open my own spot. So.
Well, I love the kind of the similarities of both of you guys starting in a different industry and then actually going and getting education. And then like, I want to do this, but I want to do it right. And not dissing anyone that just like is a home brewer that goes into it, because we've had fantastic beer personally. I know Ethan has, and I know in our boxes from brewers that were just home brewers and then eventually got the equity to be able to expand.
Without a doubt. And I think that, like, just to reiterate what I said, I think that like someone like Neil, who had an education in engineering, like, that's invaluable. That dude knew what he was doing. He could understand all of the math and science and stuff. And like, he didn't necessarily need to go to brew school to be making banging beers, but like, I did. Like, I studied film for 4 years. Like, I didn't understand equations and all of that stuff. And it is really important in brewing. And like, all it, like, you know, beer's one of those interesting things where like, it's really easy to create a beer. You know, it's really easy to take grain and get sugar out of it and ferment it into beer. And when you're trying to make the best beer that you can, and you really care, and you're I think it's clear that Neil is, and I am too, of like making this our lives because we love it. It becomes all consuming and like kind of difficult to really take like all of these beers that you love and try to make the best versions of them. So for me, education in the science and engineering of beer was absolutely necessary if I wanted to also be a brewer. But to your point, there are so many great brewers that just had a home brewing background that came from an educational background in some kind of chemistry, biology, engineering that don't necessarily need to take it to another level like I did.
Yeah, so talk to me, like, but there is that like fusing of art and science that goes into this, right? There is sort of a creative element.
For
So
sure.
with something like Lustra, where what was sort of, I know this is your core initial beer, but like, where are you taking inspiration from when you come up with a new concept for beer or even this one itself?
So this Lustra specifically, like at least in the beginning, when I, you know, was going through brewing school and toying around with the idea of opening my own brand. Like I said, I was lucky enough to travel a lot for my job. So I got to visit a ton of breweries all over the place. And obviously New England was my favorite place to be for beers. you had the Alchemist and you had Hill Farmstead. They were already operational. Trillium was just starting out. Bissell Brothers opened up in 2013. And at the time, because I went through brewing school in early 2014. So like these guys were young, they were small. You had to really, really know beer to know who these people were. And I loved it. I just thought that like it was such a like going back to kind of the culinary aspect of beer, of saying, you know, like this beer can pair with so many things on so many levels because of its flavor contributions from hops and the softness of it, and it's not overpowering. That's not to say like I absolutely love West Coast IPAs. So like we're relatively well known for our hazy beers, especially like pre-COVID. But we do a ton of West Coast IPAs. I love West Coast IPAs, but at that time, everyone was just trying to make the most bitter beer possible. And it
I
was like
remember that.
pushing hops to a level that was like, how is this enjoyable anymore? You know what I mean? Like there is no nuance here. There is no flavor. You're just trying to make it bitter. That's still a fun time in brewing history, but you had these new guys doing these things with hops that were like just so incredibly impactful from an aroma and a flavor standpoint. And I would say that just like New England as a whole was kind of my inspiration of I'd say Bissell's at the top. Like Bissell Brothers for me is like I just love those guys and I love the beers and they were so nice and really cool when I was trying to do my thing. So like I would say like they're my main inspiration, at least from an early standpoint of what I was trying to do. So yeah, that's where it came from. And really no one was doing it in Pittsburgh. So that's what we did.
I mean, that's what you do, right? When there's not something, you find like an empty spot. And that obviously, I come from both film background as well and a home brewer. So a lot of the stuff you're saying, I like fully identifying with. But like you see a need or you see like an empty pocket, right? And then you fill that. And so that's like, that's what you're trained as a, as an artist. And then as a chef, you know, in that food of like, there's this gap. If nobody's doing hazy, fun, hop forward beers, let's do fun, hop forward beers. Sure. And you're doing it well. And that's, I mean, that's fantastic. And when I homebrew, and I know Ethan has had a few of mine over the days, you know, I focus on, I just like food. I just like food, which is why I got hungry when I was looking at the burgers. I was like, oh, I just, and now I need a burger even after eating dinner. But adding flavors and just wanting flavorful food, I just want a good flavorful beer. And this is providing everything that I want. I'm getting that bitterness. I'm getting that citrus. I'm getting that fruit. I'm getting that softness. It's delicious. And I can see why you've been brewing this for so long. But I do want to know, how many variations have you gone from the original batch to Great this? Question.
At this point, I don't even know. I would say that Lustra for a while. So we opened up the facility that we're in now. We have two spots. We have them both, but our original space is a block away from our old space. So we're 925 Main Street and 1025 Main Street. And 1025 Main Street is our new spot. We opened that up at the end of 2021. And I would say for the most part, since we started brewing on that system, Lustra hasn't changed. Like it's our one very consistent beer. Like we might change some water salts as like the water changes and we do certain things like that, like very small, minute things. But as far as the actual recipe is concerned, it is very consistent. We also brew it every single week. So it like has to be, because it's like, you know, we're on a 3 week turn. Like everybody, brewers have different turns, at least for ales, not for lagers, but like for ales, I've seen people go as low as 7 days. I mean, that's, to me, that's insane, unless you have, you know, certain filtration and stuff, but you can do it. We're 3 weeks almost to the day of brewing to glass for ales. And so if you're making a change and we're brewing this beer every week, you have 3 or 4 batches in the tank before you can even figure out what that change made. So luckily Lustra was pretty dialed, by the time we made it to that new system and we really started pumping it out. The interesting part now is being able to, you know, most of this beer, the grain bill is actually fairly easy. I mean, if you're into homebrewing, I don't know anybody listening, if you homebrew or not, but the grain side of it is relatively simple. And so is the hop. The recipe itself is very simple, but we're finally of a size that we can go out to Yakima Valley and select our hops and be able to make sure that we have consistency in the hops year over year. And I think that that has been able to make a huge difference in the past 2 or 3 years, at least for the consistency of this specific product. So, you know, it's so much of our production that we put that effort into making sure that we get the lots of Citra and Amarillo that we want to make this beer what it is. And then we allow all the other beers that utilize those hops to just be whatever they are, like to a degree. I mean, they're still dialed as well, but like not, this is the one that's important. Like Lustra is important to us to make sure that it's consistent all the time. I remember this number. I don't even know if it's accurate, but I remember talking before opening. I think I went through 30 iterations before 2016.
Wow.
Of Lustra. And then from 2016 to 2020, I'm positive that we changed things, like little things here and there, dry hop schedule, or we kind of always use the same yeast, but we would trial different yeasts, especially with this, to see if there was something that would do it a little better or whatever, some water profile stuff. So little things like that. I mean, as a home brewer, you know how it is. Like you change something small to see how it goes, because you don't want to change 1,000 things at once. But yeah, it's definitely been over a ton of iterations. But at least for the past 2 or 3 years, it is the one beer we know that we don't have to make changes to.
Nice. Yeah, I always like to ask that, just to see, especially with a flagship beer, to see like how it has progressed. But I love to hear that the past 3 years, I guess 3 years now, because we are in a new year, it's the same beer. It's the same.
I want to think about your expansion, though, because I know that you guys have also added some more traditional styles from around the globe, and you also have sort of figured out sort of like ultra low ABV offerings within there. Talk to me about what it meant to sort of expand the palate a little bit, and some maybe things you're really proud of in that process.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with the low ABV stuff. So as I said, kind of, you know, for the first handful of years, we were small. I mean, we were on a 10 barrel system brewing into 20 barrel tanks in a 800 square foot tap room. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were, that was back in like the haze craze heyday. So, yeah. You know, we could only keep, we had to produce what people were going to buy, and people were going to buy haze. That's all we did. And kind of I loved beer and I loved drinking, but like, yeah, alcohol is cool, but also like, again, like I'm coming from a culinary perspective of like, yeah. I love the flavor and like, I really enjoy drinking. Yeah. So we kind of dove into really low ABV hazy beers early. And it's been a little bit like this, as far as like whether people sure. enjoy them or not. But we've always done them. And we actually opened up with one that was 4.2%. We've gone all the way down to 2.6% is the lowest we've ever done. As a 2.6 hazy. And we do a handful a year. In the summertime, we always try to make sure to have at least one around 4 or lower on the board. And I think that was a little bit selfish, in that just I enjoyed that. And like, I know that at that time, a lot of people loved doubles and triples and wanted their palates getting blasted with hops. And like, there was inevitably going to be somebody that wanted something a little bit more nuanced, but still in that like hazy aspect of being more flavor forward from the hops. So we still absolutely do that. It's not a huge part of our portfolio, but we actually have one coming out next week. And then we have half Lustra, which Lustra is 5.8%. We do half Lustra, which is 3.5 or 3.6. That comes out once a year, but it's awesome. And then we have one called Avum, which is all Southern Hemisphere hops, and then Upward Below, which is Citra Mosaic. So we do those. Each of them end up being Lustra's, half Lustra's always once a year. The other two are like twice a year. And then beyond that, the expansion, again, it was a little bit selfish. It was that like as I progressed and studied beer and learned about beer and traveled, I fell in love with the origin of beer and the OG stuff. And it kind of goes back to the same thing of saying, you know, low ABV hops, of like you're drinking a lot. And like, I'm not condoning drinking a lot, I'm not saying that, everybody, but if you're gonna do it, you might as well have something that's not gonna you know, put you over the edge. And your palate changes and things change, and you understand beer a lot more, and you understand when you're dealing with it every day, you understand these grains a lot more, and you understand how they come across in a beer, and you understand esters, and you understand phenols, and your palate just changes and grows. And I loved specifically German, but just kind of continental lagers, as Neil was saying, like we kind of fell into German mostly. So now we started doing German beers before we moved, for sure. But the move allowed us to have them all the time. So we always have Pilsner. We just call it like, except for Kolsch, because it's a protected style like champagne. Yes. All of our other ones are just called what they're called. So Pilsner, Dunkel, alt beer. Kolsch we call Not Always Present, but it is a Kolsch style ale. And we've been doing those for a while, but we've been able to have them consistently now. So even though like Lustra is our flagship, anytime you come into the tap room, Pilsner and Kolsch is always on tap. Always. They never aren't there. Those two. And then we rotate through Dunkel, Altbier, Schwarzbier. We do a dry hop pills. We do a Keller pills. We do a couple Czech styles. We've been digging into Czech styles a little bit more aggressively. One thing that I love, but I haven't been able to, and not just me, I have a great team, just to say that. I have a wonderful brewing staff that is excellent, and I can't take full credit for any of this. But English beers are the one thing that I love so much. Like, I've, as far as like travel, I've spent more time in London than anywhere else overseas. And I just can't get it right. I just can't. I just openly, like, they're so simple that they're almost too simple. And lagers are too, but there's just like, my brain just works with lagers more and understands like the process and, the time and what it does and, just everything. And just with, we've tried a bunch of English beers and we've some that I'm very happy with and others, that I haven't been and we're still working on, but, eventually we'll start getting a good English program going too, as we keep going.
I love prepping the English beers because I feel like sometimes people just sort of poo-poo that, but yes, they do. They are, they
so good.
A delightful drink.
Right. And I think like, especially like, I totally understand in the States why people aren't amped on them. Because like anything that we get distributed is already months old. Like,
yes.
So it's like, it's impossible to understand what that tastes like fresh. And then those beers are also meant to be drank as like a hand pull cask. Like, they're designed that way. Yeah. And like, when you can't experience it that way, it makes it a completely different beer. And English beers are absolutely incredible. They're truly like, they're phenomenal, but they're really hard to do. And and the market isn't there as well. So it's hard to take the time and the effort and to put them out when so few people are going to actually get them off the board. So,
I mean, I myself love a lovely like English mild, like any day, every day, English bitter, ESB, give me those. I'm going to drink those. Luckily, like interacting with all these breweries across the country and a different city every month, I will let you know, Andrew, there has been a pattern. More people are doing English style beers. So sure, it's going to come and people want them, which is great. I will say personally, I can't do IPAs. I've tried brewing IPAs. They don't turn out well. So, you know, sometimes there's a certain style that we just, it's just not enough. It's fine.
The Achilles heel,
which it doesn't make any sense. Cause like IPAs should be like fairly straightforward. And like English ales, they're very straightforward. Yeah, I can't do an IPA. So I feel the pain. I feel the pain of like a nice, really nice beer. Just
that's
can't
why we leave it to the professionals, right?
Exactly.
And on that note, I do have to ask the gnomes.
Yeah.
You are dancing gnomes. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that there is some gnome situation here that we can be made aware of.
Oh man, I'm a very honest person, so I feel like a long time ago I should have made a really good lie for this, but I can't do it. Dancing Gnome came out of I'm a relatively weird guy, and I do like dancing. I don't like go to clubs or anything, but like, you know, I get down, I boogie. Yeah. And I think when I was thinking about the brewery and thinking of names, I had pages and pages and pages of potential brewery names and beer names and stuff like that. And I would whittle them down over time and knock some off the list. And, eventually I kind of just started calling it Dancing Gnome. Like, it always made it to the next level. And I got down to like, you know, three or four names, and I just kind of started calling it that. And I was like, well, I guess for better or worse, that's going to be the name, because that's what I'm starting to refer to it as. And I think like from an ethos and mission perspective of the brand, that's kind of where it fit for me, was that it like I very firmly believe and kind of wanted the whole ethos of the brand to be that put passion and care about anything that you do, like no matter what, like life is life. You know, like we all dislike it sometimes, you know, like there's great times, there's bad times, there's work, there's play, there's all of these things. But like, whatever you're doing, do it to the best of your ability and care about it as much as you possibly can, in the good and the bad. And to me, like the gnome always, it kind of showed that. Cause like, to me, it was always like, you know, this little guy in the garden that was like a total asshole and was going to like cause problems, but was going to make sure that that garden was tip top shape. So like they were going to like fuck with you, but like that, those tomatoes were going to be banging. So that's kind of how I always envisioned the gnome and why it worked with the mission and the ethos of the brand. So, you know, for better or worse, the other thing too is like, I think that people do remember it. So whether you like it or you hate it, like, it's memorable. And then the final thing was, as I said, I loved English beers. Like they kind of got me started in beer. And I always thought that Dancing Gnome, like if you understand English culture and English history, like Dancing Gnome is not a pub style name, but for America, it kind of sounds like a pub style.
True.
So early on, there was a thought that we were going to push hard for English style beers and try to be an English style pub. And I thought that the Dancing Gnome fit that pretty well. So those are the three tiers of Dancing Gnome.
I mean, I'm sold. Because every time that I was going through the breweries, I'm like, yeah, Dancing Gnome. Like, it's just, it sticks in there. The logo is, you know, it's, like it's lovely, like the little beer, like the it's a gnome, like yeah, the little crown, the beer, yeah, hops, that's great. Very simple, but it's, yeah, it's perfect. I know we are running out of time, and I could talk to both of you guys all night long, and we're not gonna have our podcast listeners listen to a 3-hour podcast.
I would consider that, but I feel like that would just be brutal and mean. So
I would crack open the other beers, which nobody wants this. But I do have to ask, from your kind of foodie side, what is your favorite food and beer pairing? I'm just curious.
Oh man. Oh, this is so hard.
Let me rephrase that. If you were going to pair Lustra with something, what would be your recommendation for our listeners at home?
This is a horrible answer. I genuinely think that Lustra will pair with anything. Like I really do. I think that that's the cool thing about beer too, is that like, you know, like there is, and Neil kind of alluded to it earlier, like there are certain things that pair well when you're talking about like acidity or sweetness or dryness or whatever. There's certain things that go together from a cerebral level of understanding palate, but beer can kind of go anywhere, which is what makes it like such a utilitarian, wonderful, wonderful drink. I mean, I would say pizza. like any beer with pizza to me is just, you can't go wrong. You can't. I'm a very simple American guy. And burgers too, burgers does a great job, and their burgers and fries are excellent and their beers are excellent, and it's great to be able to go there and have that stuff. But I think for this, it'd be a really good slice of pizza.
Now, this is
follow-up. Pizza and beer on the same episode. I feel like this is the ultimate in beer pairing. Like we've done it. We're done.
We got burgers. We got pizza. We've got all kinds of beers.
It's so simple and stuff. But like, I also think that that's fine. Like, like you don't have to have, like, you can really enjoy whatever is in front of you. You know what I mean? Like, and like anything works. And I think that that's why I like beer so much, is because you can make anything work. But try it out. Have it with everything. It has a mess cargo. I don't, who knows? Maybe it's
I mean,
back.
I'll try. We'll see. I'll let you know what happens when I have the Pilsner with the escargot.
Yeah.
Actually, I feel like that could work, but we'll see. Now, follow up to the pizza though. Pineapple on or off pizza?
Well, good question. This is the important questions.
I say off, but I do not judge those that put it on.
Very diplomatic. I respect that answer. No, and also I can't agree more that the Lustra with pizza. I wish I had a slice of pizza with me.
Yeah.
Also, you have some competition. Neil is pro pineapple. So, you know, that's...
Dude, all I'm saying is like, honestly, pineapple pizza with Lustra is probably really good.
Yeah.
I was like, you
got that sweetness from both sides. I bet it's pretty good.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking here is that
if you visit Pittsburgh, clearly you're going to need to get a beer from Burger. You're going to need to get a Lustra. We're going to need to try these with both pizza and burgers and have a full on comparison smackdown situation happening.
Yeah, heck yeah. And we're only like two miles apart, two-ish
That's
miles.
Nothing.
So it's a crawl.
Yeah. So we're
stumble, depending on that. If you're going through all the tin taps at go through all the lagers at over at Burgers, and then you come over and then have more over with you guys at Dancing Gnome. I feel like this is a good day. I feel, or afternoon,
yeah,
depending on how you're going. Any last minute plugs, or where's Dancing Gnome going from here?
Oh, so we're just gonna keep on chugging. we're keep moving forward. We have a relatively solid, sizable tap room here in Sharpsburg. Which is 4 miles outside of downtown along the Allegheny River, right across from the further end of Lawrenceville, where one of Neil's spots is. So we're not just across the river from them in the sense of just across the river, but if you keep taking that road and go across the river, we're right there. We're very comfortable here. Both of our spots are here. We have a decent distribution in Western Pennsylvania. We're working on growing that distribution through the rest of Pennsylvania with very limited distro in Ohio and New York. I think for us, it's continue doing what we're doing, focusing on the German lager and the Czech lager game, as we've been trying to do, as well as keep making sure our haze stays top notch and our hoppy beers, our West Coast beers, stay top notch, and then really working on those English beers. So we're gonna get there. But that's it. We're in Sharpsburg, and you can check us out online. I primarily just do Instagram, but Dancing Gnome on Instagram, and we have a Facebook. You can find us, just search Dancing Gnome, and then dancinggnomebeer.com is the website. So if you're interested to see what we're doing.
Well, when the English program really starts kicking, you know I'll be over. Clearly, we need to swing by, get our lager fix, and then our English fix, our burger fix, and our pizza fix.
Heck yeah.
Jonathan, I think we've produced an excellent road trip right here.
I would say tonight would be a good night. It's a little late, but here, when we get a little warmer, we'll go down. I'll say for New York, we'll just take a train over. We'll drink on the way. And then we'll drink there, and then drink on the way back. I feel like this is
how you do.
Yeah, this is what we do. This is what we do here at CBTBC. We just drink across the country. That's what we're here for. No, definitely, we will be keeping an eye out on that English program. I know I will. I'll come and do some taste testing for you, Andrew. We'll make sure for our listeners, this is going to be top notch for everyone. With that, I think we have covered everything from literally Mr. Rogers to pizza and beer and lagers and ales and
burgers. Don't forget burgers.
And burgers, both burgers and burgers.
Yes, the burgers, pizza and pizza. Honestly, yeah. I feel like we've set everyone up for a good menu.
I feel like there's no losing in Pittsburgh. And I know for those that live there, are like, yeah, no, like that's a given. But again, thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you so much, Neil. Fantastic beer. I know everyone is also loving the Pilsner as well and the Hazy. So everyone is already digging into this box. And of course, thank you to all of our other brewers and breweries that have provided beer. There is no shortage of good beer and experiences or food in Pittsburgh. I can 100%. This is a reason we have come back to the city twice. Every time we come back, we get different beers and they're all excellent. Like to choose only 8 beers from you guys has been almost an impossible challenge every time. Ethan, any last minute words of wisdom for our listeners?
Words of wisdom. I mean, here's the thing. I have a standard sign off line, which is drink more beer, drink local, tip your servers, and support your local breweries. Because if I've learned anything in my brief time as a beer drinker, and it's not been as long as I wish it had been, is that the guys down the street from you are probably making incredible beer, and the guys across the country are making incredible beer too. And it's worth visiting both of them to just check in and make sure that the quality standards are high. So drink more and tip everyone well, because that's what everyone is doing their best to make sure you have a good time wherever you show up.
Yes, 100%. And with that, I think that's a good night, a good day, and cheers to everyone watching. Cheers to everyone listening. Cheers, Andrew. Cheers, Neil.
Thanks very much.
Thank you guys. And we will see you all next month for another episode, CBTBC. And we're going to have fantastic beer coming from a new city and with some new beer. Cheers, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.